Gentlemen, welcome to the second podcast of Street Smarts. My name is Matt Bonavita. I'm here with my partner in this endeavor, Nick Shelsey.
Hello, everyone. I gotta say, I love the intro song. I just love it. I feel like a lady of the night.
Right. It's beautiful. And the only issue we have is that we don't have any licensing. But since we're not making any money off of it, it doesn't matter.
So people think with our three followers.
Yeah, I know. Three people who listened to us last week, Nick, and two of them were not related to us.
But we're creating a buzz.
Right. Yeah, like a fly.
A fruit fly.
So Nick came up with this week's topic. And this week's topic is our 10 favorite comedies of all time.
I want to begin by saying, was a terrible idea because I thought it would be so easy. And then as my OCD self, I wound up putting so much thought and time into it that it was driving me insane. So I guess I'm really glad that we did this, but it was a monumental undertaking on my part. I probably made something very... very easy, very, very difficult.
Yeah, and especially when you're trying to do it during work or something like that, and then people interrupt you.
Yes. Yes, maybe. Or even just, you know, in my leisure time.
Yeah, I started Googling it because you came up with the topic, and that's what we all do now. We Google everything, and people come up with a list of 100 comedies, or, you know, and I'm like, wow, or top 10 of the last 10 years.
I think it would have been easier to do, yeah, like top 10 movies of the 80s, top 10 movies of the 90s, you know. And I did, specifically, I made it incredibly difficult because I did not only, I included my criteria for my list was not only what was relevant in pop culture, but then also, you know, other things like just certain things that maybe I liked. Maybe if it was revolutionary, if it influenced other movies, other comedies. So it became all of a sudden this thing onto itself instead of something that I just enjoyed watching that maybe wasn't really a box office hit or didn't have influence in other movies. It took on a whole mind of its own.
Right. Yeah. You overthought it.
Yeah. Well, totally. It's right. Just ridiculous.
That's okay. Well, let's just get into that first. Before we get started, I want to thank our boy Yakov, who's not here tonight, and he's a little upset he's not here. He's busy because I didn't tell him about it, but he'll be here next time, and he's gonna fix this podcast up for us and make it sound real nice. So we love Yakov, and he'll be here next time. But that might have even taken even longer if he came up with a top 10 list. So maybe it's good that this topic we didn't do that.
That's true. It would have been easy for him though, because most of the comedies are done by Jewish men.
Yes,
and Yakov is a Jewish man, so maybe he has the in on that.
And I was just watching Mel Brooks talk about that.
And he's Jewish.
Yes.
He's Jewish.
Talking about why he thought Jews were funny.
Speaking of that.
Yeah. Well, first start with your criteria.
Yeah. Well, I'm laughing because I'm insane. I tried to mix a bunch of things. Obviously, I had to find it funny. Then other things that were separators that I said, oh man, I love both these movies, or I love it, but what's going to really do it? So I did, you know, maybe if it was nominated for something that you go, wow, I can't believe, you know, that movie was nominated, or a character in the movie was nominated for an actor, best actor award, or best screenplay. Then I did
like Fox Tropic Office. Thunder. What's his face? Robert Downey Jr. was best supporting actor on that, right? That's crazy.
Actually, Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr. was nominated for, yeah, best actor.
Best actor. Best okay, actor. I thought it was best supporting. Okay.
No, it was best actor.
Okay. So, wow.
Which is incredible. Mm-hmm. and maybe on my list. Mm. But
I haven't been shown his list.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's very it's top secret. I came. It's in a briefcase. You can't see. It's handcuffed to my arm, so I was able to now open it. But yeah, so you know, awards or nominated for awards, box office. How funny I thought it was, and also influence. Like, if you know, how groundbreaking was it? Did it influence other movies that I really liked and thought should make the list? So, yeah, I put way too much thought into it, but I think I came up with an interesting list.
Okay, so. I tried mentally to come up with that criteria, but I guess it's in my thinking because I certainly picked movies that were not of my age.
Yeah, that's another thing too.
You know,
yeah, it's. And you kind of like, you kind of gravitate. I'm going to be curious to see your list too, because obviously we have the same sense of humor. And one thing about Matt is when we go to the movies together, we leave room for the Holy Ghost. We have to sit one seat apart, not only because it's uncomfortable sitting on top of another grown man, but I also swing wildly when I laugh, which is a little known fact. The people in my life who are close to me know that. So I do it for safety reasons because I start swinging, hitting people as it like
does Caitlin,
I'm laughing. Sharing.
Does Caitlin sit next to you when
me
you
me and
watch
Caitlin it? Have been to two movies together.
Wow.
Two movies, and one of them was in Jersey where like you kind of sit like it's like you have your own seat
right.
around a table, so she was in safe distance. And we don't go see comedies together because she just thinks I'm a jackass.
Right.
And
she doesn't have the same
not amused at all. Can't say I blame her.
Yeah.
I have a pretty juvenile sense of humor.
Yeah, most men do. It's okay. All right, so let's get started. How do you want to do this, Nick? You want to do, we go together, your 10, my 10, or do you want to go your 10?
I think we go. I think we go back and forth. Like, okay. We'll go from 10 down. I'll say my 10. You say your 10. Then you say your 9. I'll say my 9 and back and forth. Because caring is sharing. So I want to start this off. Because I think you segued well into it.
Okay.
My number 10 movie, Tropic Thunder.
Wow.
Now,
nailed it.
Tropic Thunder is, I will admit, a movie that I originally put on and I didn't get it. I actually started, I remember distinctly, I got up and started doing stuff around the house as I was watching it. And then I said, oh man, I don't like this movie. I'm not really paying attention. And then, for some mystical reason, which happens a lot in my life, it was on again, and I just said, I'll watch it again, and I wound up loving it.
Well, I remember, because that was the first year we lived together, and I remember, I think I told you it was awesome, and you thought it was crazy. But that's happened a bunch of times where you said it back to me.
It's true.
So this is all you said. Well, watch it like 4 or 5 times.
That's probably why I maybe went to give it a second look. I'm like, well, right. If he likes it, maybe I'll check it out.
Right. Well, let's start with a clip from Tropic Thunder real quick.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there were times when I was doing Jack that I actually felt retarded, like really retarded. Oh, yeah. I mean, I brushed my teeth retarded. I rode bus retarded.
Damn.
In a weird way, I had to sort of just free myself up to believe that it was okay to be stupid or dumb.
To be a moron.
Yeah.
To be moronical.
Exactly. To be a moron.
An imbecile.
Yeah.
Like the dumbest motherfucker that ever lived.
When I was playing the character.
When you was a character.
Yeah, I mean, as Jack, definitely.
Yeah. Jack. Stupid-ass Jack. Trying to come back from that.
In a weird way, it was almost like I had to sort of fool my mind into believing that it wasn't retarded. And by the end of the whole thing, I was like, wait a minute, you know? I flushed so much out, how am I going to jumpstart it up again? It's just like...
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
You was farting in bathtubs and laughing your ass off.
Yeah.
But... Simple Jack thought he was smart, or rather didn't think he was retarded, so he can't afford to play retarded, being a smart actor. Playing a guy who ain't smart but thinks he is, that's tricky.
Tricky.
It's like working with Mercury. It's high science, man. It's art form.
Yeah.
You an artist.
That's what we do, right?
Yeah. Hats off for going there. Especially knowing that the Academy is about that shit.
That was, did you just play the whole movie in its entirety? Because that felt like an eternity.
I'm sorry. But that, just for those of you who've never seen Tropic Thunder, the guy who sounded very white was Ben Stiller, and the guy who sounded very black, 70s black, was
Robert Downey Jr. And this meets my criteria in so many different ways. Because one, as you alluded to, as you said before, Robert Downey Jr. was nominated for the Best Actor Academy Award for Best Actor. He was nominated and win. But then you have things. It's so quotable. It's so like in that skit at the end, he tells Ben Stiller, "You went full retard. You went that was your downfall. You went full retard," because Ben Stiller's character played.
And is that one of your criteria? Quotability.
Quotability is tremendous. It's something, and it's maybe also because 30% of my dialogue a day is probably some sarcastic reference to some ridiculous movie. And as you know, when you have that, like when you share that commonality with somebody and you're doing something in the middle of your day and you drop a line and somebody or one person or two people or however many people get it, it's like you connect on this level. Like you all, like they know you're in this club. Like even if it's a popular movie, a lot of people don't remember lines like that, that they could just throw them out and at appropriate moments. So that was really important for me as well.
And I guess that's pop culture intelligence.
Yes.
Would be a good way of looking at it.
Yes.
A good way of saying it. Also, I think that you, you know, just to reiterate, for those of you who are new fans, maybe we got two this week, Nick is a lieutenant in the FDNY, and I think that's definitely a firehouse thing as well. I mean, it's definitely more of a guy thing than a girl thing.
Yes.
I'm not being sexist. I've noticed that.
It's okay. You could be sexist. It's our show.
Guys tend
to get fired.
Guys tend
fired.
To do that stuff, and women don't. Well, at least they don't do it to me. They don't quote movies to me. Guys do it all the time. Even guys I'm not that close with. So I think that's also a firehouse trait. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think to really survive in that kind of environment, it's you got to have a really good sense of humor, because we definitely bust each other's chops. Mm-hmm. So you got to be lighthearted. So we'll have our comedies, and if they're on, they'll constantly be on the televisions, you know. But also one other thing, and then I'll let you go to your number 10. Tom Cruise as Les Grossman is just, it's absolute, and it's something that comes out. You got all these unbelievable actors, and there was a lot that went into that. That was kept secret, like big time. Like nobody knew Tom Cruise was in the movie. They really went out of their way to. He created that character, and they actually went out of the way to not leak that information. They really made sure that was a secret. With all the stars that were there, he really almost steals the show with that character. And it's a side of Tom Cruise that I never thought I'd see, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was fantastic, and it just blew you away, because you're not sure it's him, and you think your eyes are deceiving you.
It's amazing. So that's my number 10.
Okay, my number 10, this goes to our discussion of, I guess, our age group, is Big Daddy, because also quotability, right? Just to remind you.
I promise, I'm sorry, I don't even like that song anymore.
I know, pal, that's not it.
But I want my own ass! I want my own ass!
Okay, now that's
a
terrible scene, but it's still funny because the kid is screaming, "I can wipe my own ass."
Yes.
So.
It is. I don't know if I'd put it in my top 10 of all time.
But also, yeah, I guess, again, maybe it speaks to our age. I guess, you know, I'm 5 years older, so maybe to me it hit me at the right time. I was 23. I remember a lot of the things in it spoke to me about, you know, he's, you know, he didn't want to grow up a little bit, right? Not that I have, but he didn't want to grow up. And everybody else was, wait, that was 1999. So yeah, I can definitely, I'm probably relating to that a bit more. So Big Daddy would be my number 10. And also because, not only quotability, but just also some of the things in it with, there's some stuff where he's like, you know, playing a little game with his son, quote unquote. And he's doing the spit thing in the park, and they're like, oh, to touch the ground. So there's a bunch of stuff there that kind of appeals to me. So Big Daddy's my number 10. All right, Nick, what's your number 9?
I really tussled with this one, but my number 9 is Blazing Saddles.
Number 9, Blazing Saddles, okay.
Yeah, obviously, well, it's Mel Brooks, but obviously revolutionary. I think also it's really a timepiece when you think about it, because I think if this movie came out nowadays, you'd have a lot of people. We seem to live, in my opinion, in a sensitive culture where some of these jokes, I think people would be completely outraged.
Oh, my God. And on that note, let me hold you right there, Nick, because on that note, Mel Brooks talks about one of the things that didn't make Blazing Saddles in 1973.
We were just talking
We were talking about Blazing Saddles. That movie, I really think, in a lot of ways, changed the game. That's how it felt to me when I watched it at the time. Everyone thought it's the funniest movie we've ever seen when that movie came out. Was anything cut from that film? I mean, it really took everything to the edge. Did you take any scenes out?
You know, I was very brave. I had Final Cut, so the studio actually legally couldn't trim it. They couldn't cut anything. But I had filmed something, and when I saw it, I got scared. I really got scared, and I said, I'm going to take that little scene out. It was the scene in which Madeline Kahn is in her dressing room with Cleavon Little. Mm-hmm. And after they eat Schnitzelgruben, she blows out the candles, and she says in her German accent, oh, is it true? Is it true what they say about you people? How well you're built, is it true? Is it true? It's all in the dark now. And he said, and Cleavon says, I hate to disillusion you, man, but you're sucking on my arm.
I was gonna say, that is a part where it's true, it's true. So I'm like, what is he getting at? Where's this going?
But so go ahead.
It's fantastic. I mean, it really is. And it's Gene Wilder, who, oh God, I love so much. And it's just a great script. It's got fart jokes, for crying out loud. I mean, it's revolutionary, and I think it still holds true. You know, I just love this movie. It's one of my favorite Mel Brooks movies.
Yeah, and and you know, you and I differ politically, but I can understand how you say that it would be offensive. You know, and just to be a bit more topical, we're recording this on March 2nd, a couple days after the Oscars. And, you know, Chris Rock is getting some crap the other day about some stuff he said at the Oscars. But if you don't want that shit said, don't hire Chris Rock.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's been around for 25 years. You know what's going to come out of his mouth, and especially what was going on with the Oscars this year. You had to know he was going to poke fun at that and you know, make as much fun of everything as he could. And one of his jokes was about, you know, back in the 60s, we weren't worried about the Oscars. We were worried about lynchings and, you know, being raped and things. Hey, you know.
Right. And people were up in arms the next day about him saying that. So that's why, even more so, this movie, just if it came out nowadays, I don't know. I don't even know if it would be able to come out nowadays. But you know what's funny? It came out when it did, and it plays on all the networks, and people love it. So thank God it came out when it did, because I don't think it would come out nowadays if it.
And they very rarely they change some words, you know. But essentially, it's the same thing.
All right. So now, what's your number nine?
My number nine, and I don't have anything set up for this because I don't want this to run too long, but. Is Old School.
Good, yeah. And that was, I was tussling with that one.
I think you were going to tussle with everything that you didn't.
Oh boy,
that didn't make it.
It looks like the pages I have in front of me. It looks like A Beautiful Mind.
And
the
if
Russell Crowe.
And I'm sure that any females listening to this would be like, well, that another thing that talks about perpetual youth.
Yeah.
That you know, guys going back to college, so to speak. But, you know, and here's a guy who wasn't in a fraternity. I went away to school. I did not, no offense to some of my friends who were in fraternities, like John Serp and G Love.
Frankie Wilders.
Frankie Wilders and all those guys. They love it. They'll talk forever how amazing it was. I thought it was a bunch of douchebags. So I guess this was the first, my first experience with a fraternity that wasn't a douchebag. It was in 2003, years after I graduated college. And also, it's Will Ferrell's coming out party too.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, well, there was. Elf. Well, no, but there was Night at the Roxbury. It was really his coming out party.
Yeah, but it was that movie's kind of
fantastic.
Right. That was all right. And Zoolander too, which came out in 2001.
And he was in Austin Powers, if you remember.
Yeah, but he was
a big character.
Cameos,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Old School, I guess it goes back to, wow, now that I'm looking at my list, psychologists would have a lot to say about it. But okay.
It's it's called Hi, I Don't Want to Grow Up.
Right, right. Peter Pan would be next for me. Right? I know it's not a comedy. Then Hook. Okay, I'm just kidding. All right, number eight, Nick, go.
Number eight, is a tie.
A tie.
I have one tie. I couldn't separate it.
So that means it's not a top 10. It's a top 11.
It's a tie. So okay. It's a top 10. And it's a tie between Superbad and Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, both Judd Apatow. I'm sure he'd be excited about this.
Well, Superbad, you know, it was Jonah Hill's first lead role, and Jonah Hill is one of my favorites. It was a movie I really wasn't expecting to like that much. And it was just kind of to your point. It's about, you can really relate to it because it's about high school kids just trying to get with the girl and go get alcohol and go to a party. And I think we've all really been there, you know, so it's so relatable. It was actually written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who, if you remember the movie, they played the cops, which was really kind of cool because
Bill Hader played the other cop.
Oh, right. Bill Hader played the other cop. Seth Rogen played one of the other cops. But it was cool that, you know, like Seth Rogen was kind of the disciplinarian, even though he really wasn't. He was letting them shoot his gun and everything else. You know, Jonah Hill's first movie, like I said, and it was a box office smash, and it was critically acclaimed. The critics loved this movie, which usually the movies I love, they don't really love it, you know. But that was an unbelievable movie. I really loved it. And it introduced a lot of Michael Cera, Jonah Hill. Yeah,
and Jonah Hill was 23, and he had to shave like every 3 minutes for that role.
Yeah, it was, and talk about quotable. I mean, McLovin, and holy Jesus. I mean, you could go on and on with that movie. And Forgetting Sarah Marshall, oh, man. I mean, this one, God, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is great. It kind of keys in on, now it wasn't critically acclaimed. Not to my knowledge, it was a box office.
I didn't
see
it in the movies. I saw it. I don't think we got the DVD.
But man, you want to talk about, and you know, so many characters, and they spun it off obviously with Aldous Snow and Get Him to the Greek. But me and you remember, we would download those fake Aldous Snow songs that were in the movie. It was hysterical.
Inside of you.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it was outrageous. And, you know, just, it had everything. It was in a beautiful setting in Hawaii. There was beautiful Mila Kunis, you know, and Kristen Bell. And it was
full
Aldous
frontal
Snow.
Nudity.
Yeah, full frontal nudity. Yeah, Seth Rogen.
Dracula puppets.
Yes. That whole... And I remember saying this to you. Thank you for reminding me. They could have made a whole movie on the stupid Dracula puppet thing. I mean, there was music. There was everything. This movie is so underrated. And it's one of my, you know, it touches a little. It pulls on my heartstrings. So.
Also because, we probably right before it came out, we were in Hawaii.
Yes.
So I think we noticed a couple of places. I know where he did that Dracula musical look like that bar that we almost got thrown out of. Oh, no, when those guys started to start the surfers.
Like, that was a Point Break moment.
And then the surfers, when the surfers start to fight with the guy, remember when they start to fight with Jason Segel?
Right.
I was thinking of the time Nick and I were on our last night in Hawaii, some dudes wanted to start a fight with us.
Yeah.
Because we were having too good a time in their bouncers in their bar, and the bouncers were like, well, they get territorial, and threw them out instead of us.
We didn't even know. You came out of the bathroom and they're like, yeah, you walked in here like the guy goes, hey, you walked in here like you own the place, right. And Matt's like, oh, thanks. We didn't even know that there was a problem. I mean, that's how oblivious, but we weren't doing anything. Yeah. I mean,
no, there's plenty of times we deserved it, but this time we didn't.
Drinking their haterade. But yeah, so that's why it's a tie. I could not separate these two. I think they're awesome. So.
Okay. All right. My number eight, Happy Gilmore. And again, now I'm looking at it.
Do love that movie.
I'm not growing up because, again, here's
two Adam Sandlers in three movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm not giving anything away when I say that. That's it for the Adam Sandler movies.
God, I hope so. Because if Little Nicky's on this list, I'm leaving.
And this was, I mean, you know how much I love the Zohan movie. I really did.
That is where we differ big time.
But Happy Gilmore, again, I think, you know what this is? My dad passed away in 2011, and my father loved this movie. And I would watch it with him. And he loved the Bob Barker scene so much that I guess some of that rubbed off on me. Where I'm like, really? You like this movie, Dad? You know, because
I didn't know that. I mean, that's hysterical. It's a great movie. It is a great movie.
He loved this movie, and I guess from watching it with him, and then you know, again, like you said, Criteria is it. A lot of it is nostalgia too, how it makes you feel, how you remember. A lot of this is like music, right?
Absolutely.
Music brings us back to certain things. Certainly, these movies do.
It's the soundtrack of our lives.
It is.
Dick Clark.
Yes, it was very good.
But also, it's and also quotability. I mean, yeah. Come on. You got Apollo Creed. I'm sorry. All right, I know his name is Carl Weathers, but he's Apollo Creed. I'm sorry. As Chubbs. Then you got Shooter McGavin. Yeah. I mean, come on. Really? Oh my God.
I eat pieces like you for pieces of shit like you for breakfast. You eat pieces of shit for breakfast.
It's just, it is. Yeah, it's great. It's a good movie.
All right. It's number seven, Nick.
Number seven, Anchorman.
Wow.
And originally, it didn't, believe it or not, it didn't even make my top list.
Oh,
but
my God.
I had to keep getting reminded of, you know, first of all, it meets one criteria that none of these movies have yet, is that it made a sequel, and the sequel was very good. Was it better than the first one? No. But it's tough. You know, every movie can't be The Godfather where you actually sit there and you're like, wow, I think the second one was just as good or maybe better than the first.
And Adam McKay must be pretty badass. He just won Best Director. For the Big Short.
Yes. Yes. Good, great point. Right. But but it's just, talk about quotable. You could sit here and go on for days. So many lines, so many. And it was a really great idea. It was an original idea. And so many stars, Steve Carell, Will Ferrell, you know, it's just Paul Rudd. It was really well done, really funny. I mean, God, I could go on and on about this movie.
Well, having said that, let's let some famous lines from Anchorman roll that I'm sure everybody will remember.
I want to say something. I want to put it out there. And if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back. Until you use me up. I want to be on you. I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal. People know me. I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
All right, it's just
a few.
Even just his dialogue with the dog Baxter. And I remember me and you were watching this movie together in the movie theaters, and at the end, when the bear and Baxter,
and we were with one of my ex-girlfriends, we almost killed her.
Yes, she sat in between us. She sat in the seat that should have been unoccupied, so it was actually her fault. She was in the hot zone, so to speak. But it was so ridiculous. But just where the bear is screaming and roaring, and you got the dog barking, and the dialogue where the bear's like, "Oh, Katow Jow is my cousin," and "Oh, you're a friend of the bear's." I couldn't breathe. I just thought it was hysterical. So,
and that wasn't even dialogue. That was just
subtitles and animals barking and roaring at each other. So awesome, awesome, awesome movie.
All right, my number seven, Spaceballs.
Great.
Spaceballs. I don't think any of us are gonna go, "Oh, that movie sucked." Spaceballs. I can't even. Again, I think this comes from part of it is nostalgia. I was 1986. This came out.
Yep.
So I was 11. Pretty sure I saw this with my dad. My dad had already shown me Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, everything else, and this fit right in. I got all the jokes because I like Star Wars, so I got all the jokes.
Absolutely.
And Dark Helmet.
You mean Lord Helmet?
right.
Lord Helmet.
Right.
Rick Moranis. Awesome.
He was so freaking awesome.
I love that.
And there
guy.
Is a many this again. So many things, but he was my favorite in the movie, and of course. And I guess, you know, being from Brooklyn, being surrounded around different cultures, not being Jewish myself, but also understanding.
You're not Jewish?
I could also see some of the jokes which Mel Brooks throws are like Jewish jokes.
Oh, yeah.
That you just get. And I'm not saying it's only because we're from New York City, but we certainly get a lot more because we are, because we're surrounded by a lot of other cultures and a lot of
Absolutely.
Other religions.
Yeah.
So when someone calls something the Schwartz instead of the Force.
Oh, my God.
It's still fantastic. So that's my number seven. Number six, Nick.
Number six, Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, good.
Farrelly Brothers movie. You know, Jim Carrey at the time was really, he was hitting it big. And he somehow was able to really just not be so corny and cliche. I mean, quotable is not even the word.
It's
between the most annoying sound in the world. I said today actually to a guy, he's like, oh man, one of the guys got injured unfortunately in the firehouse, so he's like, oh, we're dropping like flies. I'm like, I know, you know, this one's hurt. Our pets' heads are falling off. And like half the kitchen got it and erupted into laughter. And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, what about you said all the, we landed on the moon. Like there's so many. And yeah. Even just the stupid flashbacks of him, like, you know, like trying to win over, you know, he's with
Lauren Holly is the actress.
Mary Swanson.
Yeah,
the character name, and just how he sees it in his dream sequences and stuff. It's just, it is so awesome. Oh my god!
And I think Jeff Daniels did that one for scale because he just wanted to be in the movie.
He was
awesome.
They were fantastic together, and it was really. I think it's a timeless. I love that movie.
All right, my number six is Airplane.
All right, yeah.
Yep. And I think I saw it as a kid and I laughed, and then when I got older, I got the jokes more.
Oh, sure, yeah, right.
Right, because as a kid, I didn't do much travel.
You didn't speak jive.
No, I didn't speak jive. Didn't do much travel. Smoking and non-smoking when she gives him the smoking ticket. I have a drinking problem, and he would throw it in his face, and I didn't get it. And then when I got older, I still laughed. Because I was, you know, you're eight. Mm. But then you get older and you see all the jokes and how smart it is.
It's very clever.
And again, we're going all these comedies, but all these people who write comedies, not that people who write dramas aren't smart, but they're next level smart when you make these jokes, you know? I mean, fart jokes are fart jokes, but, you know, when you can make so much fun, interesting stuff that people pick up and then can say forever, it's really, you know, it makes you timeless.
Absolutely. And it's also got another one of my favorite, Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
In it. And, you know, and I remember my grandmother, because I loved all the Naked Gun movies. You want to talk about stupid slapstick comedy. I love them. And I used to watch them at my grandmother's house when I was a kid. And she used to get so aggravated that I liked Leslie Nielsen as a comedian, because she used to be like, he's a serious actor. He was a serious actor when I was young. And I'm like, well, you're 1,000 years old. Deal with it. He's right. Funny now to me. You know, all be right. Happy that, you know.
Sure, she appreciates that.
Well, she's senile, so whatever.
She's definitely not listening.
She's probably not going to subscribe to this podcast.
All right, you're number five.
Number five, Animal House.
Wow. Okay. None of the National Lampoons made mine. I'm just going to throw
Animal
that out
House,
there right now.
Now, this is where I get all historical and shit. This is probably the most copied movie of all time. And it made my top five because when you think about it, it's the frat house. It's got the evil dean. You know, think about the movies that it's influenced. It's influenced another one of my favorites, Revenge of the Nerds. It influenced one of your favorite top 10 movies, Old School, where it's got the asshole dean who tries to kick them out. They're starting a fraternity. Even like Van Wilder with Ryan Reynolds. You know, it's a repetitive theme, and this was the first one to really do it. Plus, John Belushi.
Right, but I think I think it influenced a lot more than that, because I think it started the genre of goofball comedies.
Oh, 100%. I'm just
R-rated goofball comedies. You know, up until that, you know, goofball was like the Three Stooges. That's goofball, but it's not R-rated the way they did it.
Right, and incredibly quotable.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
Great movie.
All right. Speaking of people,
great.
That's how you know seven greats. Speaking of influential. My number five is Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I tell you, you know, you started out, you scared me a little bit with these Adam Sandlers. Okay. But now you see, I thought it was Peter Pan. You went historical. This is a good list. This is a well-rounded list.
Monty Python in general is highbrow comedy, I guess, right? But the Life of Brian, all that stuff, and, you know, it's no secret, I'm not very religious. I'm not poking fun at religion, and just the absurdity, not the faith part of it, is funny to me. And this is about the Crusades and the looking for the Holy Grail. And the part that really just got me was when I had the Black Knight stopping the path. they cut off every limb and he doesn't give up.
But a scratch, right?
Yes. Hysterical. So it has both the religious aspect, has the historical aspect, and then it's funny. And it's just poking out, again, it's absurdist stuff. You know, it's so ridiculous, which I guess a lot of this is. You know, certainly, Anchorman is absurd. Blazing Saddles absurd. So this is one of the original absurdist comedies. And, the comedy troupe always did that. And they inspired other improv comedy troupes like A Place You Love, Second City.
Oh,
you know, awesome. The other new stuff, like the girls who are doing it now, Broad City, the girls who are making that show. I forget their names right now, but they're two New York City girls, and they're absurdist about New York City. So I'm not saying that they love Monty Python, but I think it creates a genre.
Yeah.
Okay, number four.
Real quick, Monty Python I thought about, and also Airplane I thought about, but I think this is where, like, you're only 5 years older than me, roughly, mm-hmm. and this is where it's like, I watched those movies, but I think they were a little bit more like, you had a better, I probably seen Monty Python twice, mm-hmm. you know, and I like it, but I think you were able to relate to it more because you were a little bit older, maybe when you first saw it, mm-hmm. you really got it more. I don't know, but yeah, that's a great
and it's
choice.
Not, and this is not, again, no secrets. You know, my dad was a huge influence in my life.
That's true, yeah.
He pushed me to watch things that, you know, your mom wasn't watching, you know.
That's 100% correct.
So it's just things like that where he's like, you know, I remember my dad making me sit down and watch certain movies.
Yeah, the women in my life have unbelievable. My sister is definitely the only person who can relate to me when it comes to sense of humor and movies.
Right.
We both have the same sense of humor and both like the same ridiculous movies. But anyway, number four, Caddyshack.
Okay.
And once again, I don't know. I think it was the first real sports comedy movie. And obviously it influenced Happy Gilmore, which was your number eight. And I love Happy Gilmore. I didn't put it in my top 10, but it was kind of revolutionary. I mean, you got, you know, Belushi, Chase, Dangerfield.
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. I mean, the list goes on. And I really think it carries over and transcends incredibly, you know, quotable movie. So many lines you could take from that. It's timeless. It's a great movie. And it influenced other movies.
All right. Caddyshack. I agree. I love it. I didn't put it on my top 10. I guess because you just can't fit everything on your top 10. And I didn't cheat like you with putting two movies in one spot.
You also didn't almost have an aneurysm trying to put your list together. Right. So I think I deserved maybe a little bit of leeway here.
My number four is South Park. Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Great movie.
Okay, and everything is quotable in that damn movie, and here's one of my favorites.
You guys, this is all Kyle's mom's fault. Shut up, Cartman. Kyle's mom is the one that started that damn club, and all because she's a big, fat, stupid bitch.
Don't say it, Cartman.
Wait.
Don't do it, Cartman.
Wait.
I'm warning you.
Okay, okay.
I'm getting pretty sick of him calling my mom.
Well, Kyle's mom's a bitch. She's a big fat bitch. She's the biggest bitch in the whole wide world. She's a stupid bitch. And there ever was a bitch. She's a bitch to all the boys and girls.
Shut your fucking mouth, Carmen!
On Monday, she's a bitch. On Tuesday, she's a bitch. And Wednesday, and Saturday, she's a bitch. Then on Sunday, just to be different, she's a super king. Come a maya bitch.
Come on, you all know the words.
Have you ever met my friend Kyle's mom? She's the biggest bitch in the whole wide world. She's a mean old bitch. And she has stupid hair. She's a bitch, bitch.
I don't want to spend too much time with these clips, but that's just, the fact that they can, their music, and it was proven out later on with the Book of Mormon, their music is Broadway-type music.
Absolutely.
So they're doing things like Kyle's Mom a Bitch, but it sounds like Oklahoma, you know?
Yeah.
The way they do it. It's not, it's a joke, yeah, but it's really well-done jokes.
Yes.
And, you know, you start thinking about, you know, they had stupid songs like It's Easy, MK. Blame Canada was nominated for a damn Oscar.
Yes.
So South Park was my number four. Number three, Nick.
Number three, Austin Powers.
All of them?
No.
Are you picking what?
I'm picking the first one because obviously it started. The third one was okay. Yeah, it was all right. But once again, you got so many unbelievable characters and played by really one person. And, you know, it's just quotable as could be. A couple of great movies and a very, very original idea.
you know, the whole 70s secret agent. It pokes fun at the Bond movies. I just, it's really a classic, very original, and fits numerous characters between Dr. Evil, Fat Bastard, you know, I obviously Austin Powers, just, and then the females that came in. It was just really great comedy.
Well, then my number three is also Austin Powers.
Boom.
But I was going to say The Spy Who Shagged Me, the second one.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Because number one was good.
What do you have against Elizabeth Hurley?
Nothing. Number one was good.
Although Heather Graham.
And Beyonce was good in Goldmember. But I think number two had Fat
Bastard. Sexy Cleopatra.
Right. Number two had Fat Bastard. Number two had Heather Graham. Yes. I think it was...
Fat Bastard wasn't in the first one, was it?
No. Huh. And you know, the doctor, the first one was made for a little bit of budget, and it seemed like the creativity and the budget hit the same spot in August in Austin Powers 2. And then the joke started getting boring by Austin Powers 3.
I agree.
But the budget was there.
That's a great point. That is a great point.
So
it's like the first one, they were like, we think this is funny, but we're not going to give it too much money.
Right.
And then they're like, well, we're onto something. The second one. So the jokes were good and it had the budget. Right. That's a great point.
Yeah. And you have whatever, Mimi Rogers being the old, the her mom, what's her face's mom? I can't remember her name. The spy, spy's mom, Heather Graham's mom. Heather Graham was, you know,
it wasn't
amazing.
Heather Graham's mom. I think it was Elizabeth Hurley's mom.
I'm confusing them. Yeah. Thanks. But, and Heather Graham was, I guess right off of Boogie Nights, she was amazing. Oh,
yeah. Like Roller Girl. Just, yeah. Right.
So, again, it also came out at a time when I probably noticed those things a bit more. But Austin Powers, the second one, seemed to jump out at me the most.
Wow. So we both had Austin Powers at three, only different movies.
Ones.
That's pretty
good. Okay.
I guess that Austin Powers franchise, so to speak.
Yeah, the franchise is, I'm not going to say that the Goldmember was terrible and that was the worst one.
Right. Well, I will. I'll say this.
It was terrible?
No, I'll say it was the worst one.
Oh, the worst one. Yeah.
The worst one.
But it wasn't terrible.
No,
I would still watch
it. No, it wasn't terrible.
You know?
I love gold.
I remember seeing that in Florida, six
Joey,
of us.
Joey loved him. What was his name? Oh, God, he was the Dutch
Gold
guy.
Member. That was
his
name.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that's why I'm not very creative there.
You know, and the running gags of the, you know, the sharks with laser beams on their head. I mean, you know, Seth Green was awesome in it. Number two was awesome in it. Number one was awesome in it. Whoever the hell, Robert Wagner. So I thought a lot of the running gags, but number two, it hit its stride. Number two.
I think you go with number two now. What's your number two movie?
You want me to go number two or you go number?
Yeah, we should have went back and forth. We deviated from the plan.
All right. My number two is Anchorman, which you already discussed for all the same reasons that you discussed. This goes right back to what we were just talking about. My memories of it are positive. You know, laughing my ass off, falling out of a seat when Baxter starts talking. Baxter starts talking
awesome.
To
the bear.
To the bear. It was
Cat-Tow John's cousin.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it was great.
And it was next level ridiculous.
Just the sex panther. Right. Where the head of the panther comes out of the bottle. I cried. I think I missed 5 minutes of jokes. I was laughing so hard.
And it reminded me recently of Zoolander 2 when we saw it with one of my favorite jokes in the original Anchorman was the erection he had.
Yes. Yes.
He's like, Mr. Berger, do you have a giant erection? And that was fantastic.
Downstairs. Mr. Berger.
So Anchorman is number two for me. I'm not going to play any more clips of it because I've already played a few. So, Nick, what's your number two?
My number two, you know, it's, I might have been overtaken a little bit by my love for this movie, but I, Something About Mary.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie, oh my God. It's Farrelly Brothers again. It might have been their first movie. The zipper scene is classic. You know, the scene where Mary takes Ben's children off of his ear.
Yeah.
And then puts it in her hair and how she's wearing it the whole night. And then characters. You got Magda. Matt Dillon's character. Matt Dillon stole that movie. I mean, and as you know, Matt, I love... Just when he's talking about
Santiago Chile.
Oh, my God. But forget about when he goes, oh, the Silente Towers. Oh, my God. I can't What a fantastic movie. I'm glad they never made a sequel of it. I really felt it was an original. And the Farrelly brothers obviously have gone on to make so many more movies that were fantastic. So was Ben Stiller. I thought it was really well done.
And the only thing that about it that I would say is it's a little dated is only because they used Brett Favre in it.
Brett Favre.
Brett Favre, right. Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, obviously, a movie's going to get dated because of technology and things like that. Absolutely. And the cars they drive and things like that.
Yeah.
But
once you put technology into a movie, it's immediately dated.
Right. And I wonder, you know, you mentioned this before. I wonder if, you know, they were making fun of a kid with autism in that movie. Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Essentially, that's what it is. He has OCD. He can't touch his ears.
Yes.
And that's the joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wonder if that would pass now. I mean, we all
so
laugh.
So quotable. So many lines from that movie. That's just, so.
All right. So that's your number two. I already told you my number two. You want to go with your number one first, or you want me to go with mine?
Go with it.
Okay. My number one was your number nine, Blazing Saddles.
Wow.
Blazing Saddles is, again, I guess it's my dad. I can watch it. If it's the Godfather to me. If it's on TV, I'll watch it. Okay, and
it's been on actually. I was watching it today.
If it's on, I'll watch it. And then you have things on it, and you again referring to your things that would never pass today are scenes like this when they're talking about figuring out they want the black guys working on the railroad to sing, so the rednecks tell them to sing.
Now come on, boys, where's your spirit? I don't hear no singing. When you were slaves, you sang like birds. Come on, how about a good old nigger work song?
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a belt out of you? Some get a kick from cocaine.
Hold it, what the hell is that shit? I'm in a song.
Okay, so I'm not gonna let it go on. You could you'll have YouTube. You can go look at it. You know, that you talk about that being politically incorrect. Holy shit. I don't know if you could, you know, he had words, you know, things like, hey, when he's the first black sheriff, he says, sorry about that, folks. A little technical issue. So when he says things like...
so unprofessional.
Excuse me while I whip this out. And the whole theme of it is having a black sheriff. So that was just genius to me. It's transcendent. It's anti-establishment. It is... It's timeless. Because it's a Western thing... It's a Western movie that, I guess because of the fact that it's Western, it's timeless. You could watch it forever. And the jokes are timeless. There's no jokes referring to 1973 life, you know?
Right. But once again, I feel it's timeless, but I don't know if this movie would be made right now.
Right. It wouldn't be. I didn't say it would be made right now. I'm just saying that you can watch it right now. So finally, I feel like I should have a drum roll, but I don't have one ready. What is yours? I know you worked painstakingly for number one.
My number one, and to be honest, I feel it's not even close to...
It's not even close.
Coming to America. Coming to America on so many different...
First levels. Eddie Murphy's one.
I battled with that because I love Trading Places. Right. You know, and even The Golden Child, which obviously, you know, it's not Beverly Hills Cop. You know, it's 48 Hours. There's a ton of Eddie Murphy movies, but this movie, it's... timeless. First of all, quotable. I mean, it hits on so many levels. There's so many lines that you could go to. I believe it's the first movie where once again, one actor, actually two, because Arsenio Hall as well, plays multiple hysterical characters.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, once again, it influenced my number three, which is Austin Powers, where one guy playing so many different roles. And also, it's that barbershop. You got the barbershop. It probably influenced the comedy Barbershop. You got so many hysterical characters. Once again, you could make movies like I was alluding to with Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and they did, but Al the Snow would get him to the Greek. You could make a movie about sexual chocolate. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you can make a movie about the barbershop.
You could make a movie about the McDowells.
Yeah.
How hysterical that was. And Samuel L. Jackson robbing McDowells? Seriously? I mean, how much more could you have? And he even had advertisements in it. Soul Glow.
Yeah.
Are you a hysterical? I mean,
this. Yeah, the movie, advertisement was hysterical.
The advertisement. You have a band with his singing, well, they were singing the Whitney Houston song. But you have the Sexual Chocolate. You got the Soul Glow commercial. You got McDowell's. Eddie Murphy playing all these hysterical characters. Influenced so many movies. It's just actually, and you remember the day of my wedding, I played a little joke on everybody, and I told my mother and the best man, I said, oh my God, I can't believe it, but the organist for the church canceled last minute, so I'm going to have somebody, I think, come in, I sing, or I could play this song, whatever it is, if the singer can't make it. And I wound up going to my iPad, and I played She's Your Queen to Be. And everybody got it, was laughing, you know. But
did your mother get it?
Yeah. Well, she got it, I think, because everybody else was laughing. Okay. But yeah, but Coming to America is by far my favorite movie. It's really not even close. I love it. It's amazing. So many levels. It's fantastic.
Well, there you have it. I know that most people their whole life were waiting for this. Whoever's listening to our podcast right now, they're like, well, I wonder what Nick and Matt thought were the top 10 comedies of all time. Maybe next week we'll come out with the top 10
10
dramas. What's up?
I'm not done.
Oh, you're not? We have honorable mentions? You're supposed to do that before number one.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Because I went through so much agony in making this list, I came up with so many more movies that I loved. So I did a top 10 of just no criteria, but watchability of myself.
This is so much fucking bullshit because you... This is cheating. No, your top 10's a top 11.
This is cut the nonsense. This is hard work.
Oh, and now it's Nick's watchability.
You get right. What you put in.
Okay.
If maybe you didn't have just 11 or 10 movies on a sheet.
Right.
And go to the Adam Sandler well.
I did the homework. Okay.
Jewishness. I did the homework. Maybe you have a top 10, Maddie.
The homework. Go ahead. Let's hear.
So for all
Nick's watchability list. This is bullshit.
Hope you appreciate this. Yeah. This is just Nick sitting on the couch, channel surfing, going, "Oh, love this movie." Number 10.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Okay.
Fantastic.
You cannot comment. We're already at 52 minutes. So
number 9.
Okay.
Ace Ventura: Pet Detective.
Okay.
Number 8. Happy Gilmore.
I'm glad it made your secondary list.
Yes. Number 7, Wedding Crashers.
Okay.
Number 6, Borat.
Yes.
Number 5, Kingpin. Oh, Kingpin.
Wow. So
Kingpin.
Kingpin is number 5. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Once again, this is my list.
Yeah, it's your list. You're entitled to your opinion.
Number 4, Zoolander.
Okay.
Number 3, this is going to blow your mind, The Other Guys. So underrated.
Very quotable.
Yeah. Oh, number 2, Half Baked.
Okay.
Oh, Half Baked. And number 1, which made your list, and it was difficult. It was very difficult to exclude Spaceballs.
Okay, so that's your watchability list. Do you have the next one, watchability while you're in the fucking toilet or something?
No,
like that?
I have my honorable mentions. Ted, Tommy Boy, Chris Farley, love him. Trading Places, Old School. Office Space,
mm-hmm.
Waiting, American Pie.
Waiting, wow.
American Pie, The Interview, love Seth Rogen.
The Interview?
The Interview with Seth Rogen and James Franco. James Franco.
I don't remember.
With Kim Jong-il.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Okay, that was good. Yeah.
And did I say Ted?
You said Ted.
And Bridesmaids?
Bridesmaids, no.
Bridesmaids, fantastic.
And we're sexist because we haven't thought of any female comedies until now.
Women really
aren't. Oh, women aren't funny.
And I would even dare to say, even though I didn't like it the first time I saw it, I would say The Hangover. Okay. Which a lot of people would probably put on.
You didn't like it because when we saw it, they were like, they were fifth graders in the freaking, or 10th.
It was also so jacked up for me. It was kind of just like, oh, God.
Yeah, we saw it at the wrong time. We saw it like 2 weeks after it came out. That actually could be a good topic. That, you know, there's a documentary out there called Women Aren't Funny. Rich Voss and Bobby McFarlane did it.
Probably written by a very intelligent person.
Rich Voss and Bobby McFarlane. They're both comedians. So okay, so that's our top. That's Nick's top 30.
You're welcome, everybody.
Nick's top 31.
A for effort.
I did the homework and did.
Keep telling yourself that. You know, it's
you know. Being a teacher for 18 years, I could tell you when I assign something that says 2 pages and you give me 6, I get freaking annoyed with you. I don't get happy you did it. I don't think you're an overachiever. I think you're a kiss ass.
I think you, whose ass would I be kissing per se?
The audience, because a lot of people are going, well, he didn't mention Ted.
I give the audience what they want.
Yeah, you gave it
they
to
don't
them,
want,
right?
They want thought. They want to be intrigued.
Right.
Our audience is highbrow, intelligent individuals.
Yes.
They want to sit here. If they're spending 58 minutes, whatever we're on right now, listening to us, they want to think.
I hope that you enjoyed the last 55 minutes with us, ladies and gentlemen. We will try to do this once every week. We will post them on our podcast. We'll also post them on SoundCloud. You can email us at streetsmartspodcast@gmail.com. We don't have a website up, but you could always grab us off of our DJ website, which is rhythminmotion.biz. Both Nick and I will link there, so you can email us personally there, or you can email us at streetsmartspodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, you can say you like this podcast on iTunes. That's good. You can leave a comment on iTunes. That's good.
And let us know, like, which list did you like the best?
Your top 31 and my top
lists,
10.
Or Matt's.
Yeah, I'm a slacker.
That's Peter Pan epidemic. Next, we will have a psychiatrist on to interview Matt.
Right. That's next week. But in the meantime, folks, we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening and take care.